Hi, I'm João Almeida, and you're watching The Cycling Dane.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another one of our recap race analysis here, the second one of today. Check out the trainer one if you haven't already. As always, I'm joined by Patrick Blake of Audi Cycling, and one third of the Echelon Cycling Podcast. And I mean, Patrick, Paris-Nice, stage four, what happened?
Well, it was Tirreno and Paris-Nice. You probably wanted to be tuning into this one today, more than likely. It was also raining, like it was in Tirreno Adriatico. I've added leave to quite a lot of action. We had an early break, including Mathieu Burgodeau, Christian Scaroni. Those two were battling out for the KOM classification points. However, it was all really coming back together because UAE Team Emirates were working on the front. And it really came back together around the first ascent of the Mont Blanc, which is where the finish line is as well. We did two ascents of that today. So over the first ascent, we then had an intermediate sprint after that. That was won by Remco Evenepoel ahead of Primoz Roglic and Laurens Piffy. Piffy obviously looking to get some green jersey points to try and extend his lead over Mats Pedersen. But after that, we saw Luke Plapp launch an attack after the intermediate sprint, and he was joined by Santiago Buitrago on the Category 1 climb, Le Chap. And these two got a lead of about 30 seconds or so. UAE Team Emirates first leading with Finn Fisher-Black because they unfortunately lost Marc Soler throughout the stage. He's DNF. Finn Fisher-Black took up the pacemaker to start with, and then it was Jay Vine after that. However, descending Le Chap with about 20 kilometers to go, we saw that the gap remained somewhere between 40 and 30-ish seconds. However, Jay Vine pulled off of the front and was just like, okay, well, I'm done now. And Ineos went to the front with Castroviejo, with Carlos Rodriguez, with Omar Fraile, decided to set pace to take over from UAE. But all this time, whilst they were kind of deciding who was going to be working, the gap was going out towards more than 45 seconds for Plapp and Buitrago going on to the final ascent of Mont Blanc. It's worth noting that throughout all this, David Godu was dropped on the previous climb, so therefore he was 1 minute down, and therefore his GC aspirations in this race seemed pretty much over. He was in a crash involving Félix Gall and also Aurélien Paré-Pentela. However, they managed to make it back into the Group 1. But on the final ascent of Mont Blanc, Buitrago was very savvy. He sat in the wheel of Plapp, essentially realising that Plapp was fighting for the yellow jersey and just let him set pace. And Buitrago, with about 1.4 kilometres left to go, didn't really launch an attack. He was just setting a pace which Plapp couldn't follow. And Buitrago going through 1 kilometre to go, we saw behind that Quickstep were then taking it up with Van Vilder for Remco, with all the other GC contenders pretty much just in solo ones and twos to try and follow the wheel off the Quickstep duo. Buitrago was going towards the finish line, but then behind we saw Remco launching an attack. It wasn't particularly strong, and so there, Gaal went over the top of him. Remco followed that. Skelmo was in the wheel. Jorgensen was there. Roglic was there. A couple of the guys were gap behind. But Buitrago crossed the finish line first, followed by Luke Plapp. And then it was a fight for third in the four bonus seconds. And it looked pretty set on, but it was going to be Remco. However, Scott will be very happy that Mathias Skelmos Jensen rolled in on the line for third place and the four bonus seconds. Good to see that Skelmos was fighting for these bonus seconds. But in terms of the final stage standings, Santiago Buitrago wins ahead of Luke Plapp, Mathias Skelmos Jensen in third. They were 37 seconds back on the winner. Remco Evenepoel in fourth, Egan Bernal in fifth place, Felix Gall in sixth, Primoz Roglic in seventh, conceding 2 seconds to Evenepoel, which isn't the biggest deal. Matteo Jorgensen in eighth, Harald Tejada in ninth, and Brandon McNulty was the highest placing of UAE Team Emirates. Despite all of the success of yesterday, UAE seemed a little bit on the back foot today, Scott.
Patrick, who cares? That's not the headline. Primoz is going to win Flèche Wallonne, Amstel Gold, and Liège-Bastogne. He did that to Remco Evenepoel. Okay, I mean, fair enough. Interesting. I think they were a bit shocked about the Santiago Buitrago, the strength of that move with Luke Plapp. But yeah, do you think UAE, after such a strong team time trial, bit caught under the weather, or however you want to say it?
It's the problem of having too many chefs in the kitchen, isn't it? Is that a lot of other teams here have one leader or maybe two at most, but UAE coming in with four. I mean, Jay Vine had said in an interview yesterday before the TTT that, you know, that was going to decide who was going to be the leader, and it just seemed completely unclear to everybody who the leader actually was. And I mean, it seems to be Almeida, but McNulty ended up finishing higher up than him. So it's just about as clear as mud for UE. And I think they would have done better really just having a bit more organisation about them, to be honest. The fact that they're only 3 seconds ahead, I mean, McNulty, this is, of Remco, is just a bit worrying, to be honest. I don't think that's enough time for UE to really try and hang on to this race. I think they really need to kind of switch things up and, you know, try something else, because they pretty much just drag Remco to the bottom of the climb. I know they were just defending yellow, but you pretty much just worked for him so that he could put some seconds into you. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't great from UAE today, I don't think. But there's lots of positives to be taken out in other teams' areas. I mean, like you say, Skelmoser, I think he probably deserves a little bit more discussion about him. Do you think, I know he lost a bit of time at the team time trial, but it's very promising seeing that he beat Remco. And like, Remco looked like he was going hard. I'm not sure if he was, like, he was definitely trying. So it's not like Skelmoser just beat him kind of not on merit. It was a very good ride from Skelmoser, and he was really putting himself in a position to challenge Remco today. Do you reckon he could finish on the podium of this race?
Yes, obviously he's going to win it.
I mean, what about Roglic? 7th place.
Not quite that punchy Roglic we're used to. And even in the intermediate sprint, he did, well, in the bonus second sprint, he wasn't able to match Remco.
I mean, this looked, for all intents and purposes, a Roglic finish. 3 kilometers, 7%. I think a lot of people would have put their money on Roglic to win today. But the fact that, you know, he was beaten by 4 other people in this GC group, Gal Bernal, Evenepoel, Skelmoser, to me, that's not promising. I know that it was a twisty climb, so positioning was probably more key than anything, but I don't know, are you concerned that Roglic is not in good form, perhaps? Like, I would say at the moment that Skelmoser looks better than Roglic.
No, for sure. But, I mean, does Roglic care about this race that much? I don't know, in terms of winning it again.
I mean,
to put his foot down, maybe, for sure.
But it's hard to tell. I just would have thought with a new team, quite a big stage, it would have been quite good to make a good first impression against a big rival like Evenepoel, especially since, you know, they're going to be going head-to-head against each other in the Tour later this year. For me, even if it is just 2 seconds, Roglic just didn't quite look like the Roglic that we've been very accustomed to the last few years. I'm not sure whether it's just a new team setup or whether it just wasn't his day, but I don't know. I've just got some question marks over him. It really wouldn't surprise me if Evenepoel and maybe even Skelmoser just kind of drop him a bit harder on a, you know, on the stages later on in this week, to be honest with you.
So what should Bora do? Is it just going to be damage limitation at this point? They were up there leading towards the front as well. Actually leading at one point in Tirreno and Paris-Nice, which made it quite confusing at the same time. But yeah, well, actually, no, let's not talk more about Roglic. Remco Evenepoel, what do you think? We're seeing a few cracks from him. He was very active in the bonus sprint and it looked like he was taking charge of this. And then we had that weird moment where everyone was looking at each other, or actually looking at UAE. But yeah, Remco, what do you think of his stage 4?
I'm not really sure. I'm not sure if it's just kind of smoke and mirrors and he's sandbagging a little bit, thinking like, oh, you know, it's not a day where we're going to put in loads of time, so I'm not going to try hugely on this final ascent. But, you know, he attacked. It wasn't a very Remco attack. It wasn't that really destructive, you know, put 10 seconds into people in a space of a kilometre uphill sort of Remco. He did look like he was trying hard, but Skelmoser just came round him. And I think that Remco in top form should have been quite easily dusting people off in this kind of finale. So Vas got some question marks over it. But again, I'm not sure if he was trying full gas or whether he was just sort of playing things a bit defensive, saying, well, you know, I'm ahead of Roglic and because of the team time trial in terms of GC, and I'm not worried about Buitelago and Plap up ahead. I'm just going to kind of fight it for third. But Skelmoser was just more keen to get those bonus seconds. But Remco, again, similar to Roglic, doesn't look like the full kind of the full fighting force that we've been used to seeing over the last couple of years. So, yeah, there are some question marks, I think, over the big two leaders, but maybe they'll be put to rest when we get to some of the more kind of challenging mountains later in the week. But at the moment, yeah, I do think that there's some questions to be answered for sure.
Well, we haven't even talked about the stage winner, which is a bit disrespectful of us. Thrown by Skelmos' incredible acceleration. But Santiago Buitrago, definitely a big name at this point. He's kind of been hovering between the top climbers in the world and then getting stages here, there, and everywhere. Actually saying as well, Bahrain victorious, getting two stage wins in these two races. That's quite a big achievement for them as well. And yeah, what did you make of his whole race? Didn't quite get the yellow jersey. I think that's on the shoulders of Luke Plapp, as you said, but a great, great win for him.
Yeah, a fantastic win for Buitrago. Absolutely. I think he played it just really cleverly and used Plapp to his full advantage, knowing that Plapp was more keen to try and get the yellow jersey, which he does take. You know, fair play to Plapp. We'll get onto him in a second. But Buitrago, the fact that he didn't really attack, he just sort of ramped the pace up a little bit and dropped Plapp off a wheel. You know, Buitrago's looking, again, really good for a top five in this race. Obviously, we saw him and this was a different scenario. We didn't see him competing with the GC contenders, so we don't exactly know how he stacks up against them when the attacks start flying, because he was ahead of them in kind of his own battle. But it's still impressive nonetheless that, I mean, at the base of the climb, they had, what, 45 seconds, say? Skelmos and Evenepoel finished 37 seconds, so they only gained 8 seconds on Buitrago and Plapp, who were both rolling turns and were therefore probably going into the final climb a little bit tired. So I think it's a massively impressive performance from Buitrago, but what do you think about Plapp? He is now leading the race by 13 seconds to Buitrago. I mean, we've seen there's been a lot talked about Plapp and his GC aspirations when he was at Ineos. Do you reckon this is he turning a leaf?
I'm not going to lie. When I was watching that, I was like, genius move by Ineos Grenadiers, this. And then I remembered he said Jake Ayula. Yeah, oops. Yeah, I mean, we've talked up his potential a lot, but yeah, sometimes it hits, sometimes it doesn't. How long do you think he can keep it for in terms of what's coming up? I think he's quite isolated in terms of teammates, certainly in that second group.
I think tomorrow will be fine for him, for sure. But maybe stage 6, there is this kind of 1.8 kilometer 10% climb with about 30 kilometers to go. It depends if Remco or whoever decides to attack there. If they don't, then I do think that stage 7 will be Orhon, considering, I mean, it's not the steepest gradient, but I just consider that the fact that he was being dropped by Buitrago today makes me think that why wouldn't he be dropped by Buitrago again? And not even just Buitrago, but all the other big GC contenders. So I certainly think that he could hold it for a couple of days, but I don't think he'll be taking it to the finish. But this is a step up, I think, from a GC perspective for Plapp. And it's good to see that Jayco are giving him that leadership, whereas Ineos always sort of squandered it, I think. So I'm glad to see that he's getting his opportunities at Jayco.
Oh, we have to talk about finish on David Gaudu as well. What do you make of his implosion over a stage?
God, it's not good, is it? Considering that last year he was so good at this race. I don't really know what's gone on, but he's just not the David Gaudu of 2023. I'm not sure whether this is all just because he's focused more on the tour or something this year. I don't know, more than usual. But it's not good signs, the fact that he was dropped. I know he was involved in a crash, so I think there's definitely some kind of asterisks over this performance for sure. But yeah, it's not great. And it does kind of make me question what Group Harma are going to do now. If I were them, I'd be focusing on getting Piffy the green jersey out of this race, you know, get something good. I think he's looking really strong. But yeah, Gaudu's GC challenge is over with. Even if the performance today was only because of the crash, he's already too far down in GC to be a podium or even a top 10 contender. So unfortunately, it's a the race is sort of over for Goendu, rather, sad to say, considering that we're only a few stages in. But you know what? He won't care, because he will probably do fine. If he does fine in the Tour, he won't. This will all just be a bit of a footnote on his season. So hopefully he's fine, and he'll just have a good Tour, and he'll forget all about this.
That's not really finishing on a high, but I guess here we are. Yeah, that's basically it for this video. Make sure to check out our Tirreno Adriatico analysis as well today. Yes, we've been quite busy, and check out Patrick's channel as well, Audi Cycling, and the Echelon Cycling Podcast if you want to see even more of Patrick. Clip coming up today as well. So busy day. But with that, thank you very much for making it to the end of the video. Hit the like button if you haven't already. Subscribe to the channel, and we will see you tomorrow.